From APM, I'm Ben Johnson, and this is Marketplace Tech. It's Friday, and you know what? There were a lot of tech numbers this week, so we're going to start off with just a couple in Silicon Valley. My guest, Melissa Kirsch, she's editor-in-chief of the website Lifehacker and also the host of the Upgrade podcast. Melissa, are you ready to play the game where we try to stump each other with numbers from the week's tech news?
So ready.
Okay. What do you got for me?
2 days.
2 days is how long it took a startup to figure out that there was a problem with its code.
Not bad. 2 days was the amount of time that it took Travis Kalanick and Uber to start up its own carpooling option, Uberpool, after it heard that Lyft had its own carpooling project.
This is part of the big Travis Kalanick story that came out this week.
Exactly, in the New York Times.
In the New York Times from Mike Isaac, and it's like... That feels like a short amount of time.
Yeah, it's a coincidence, right?
Total coincidence. All right, 2 hours of Fitbit data.
Was there a murder or a crime that was solved with Fitbit data?
Oh, yes.
All right, tell me.
So this refers to a murder case in Connecticut where authorities used Fitbit data with other online information from Facebook use to prove that a woman was still alive and active for 2 hours after her husband, who is now charged with the murder, claimed she was killed.
That's insane. Do not try anything.
You're wearing a Fitbit. Do not try anything.
Yeah. I'm glad we have producers here.
All right. What do you got for me?
All right. $548 million.
Ooh. Is this Twitter quarterly revenue?
This is exactly that.
Yes.
So Twitter has reported its first fall revenue since its IPO.
Yes.
And it posted $548 million in the first quarter, which was down 7% from a year earlier, but it beat investors' expectations, which is always
great. When you set the bar low.
Yeah, exactly.
When you set the bar low.
Right.
Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker, thank you for playing tally with me.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
The Tribeca Film Festival is finishing its run in New York City this weekend, and just like last year, virtual reality is playing a starring role. The VR medium had its biggest presence ever at the annual event this year. Producer Claire Tennisgetter found that even as mainstream consumers may be adopting more slowly than expected, film fans are opting in.
So I went to visit the White House.
That's Jen Coombs. She's a tourist here from the UK.
And I got toured by Barack Obama, and he was like, sitting right next to me. It was incredible.
No, she didn't actually meet Obama at the White House.
We are at the Tribeca Film Festival immersive VR experience.
Immersive virtual reality experience. We're in a big open room in the festival's main building with rows of decorated booths and installations. In each booth, there's a virtual reality headset. Put it on and you can go to the White House, a forest, or a concentration camp. People can spend 3 hours in the space and choose between 30 short virtual reality films. So how long before virtual reality is at a theater near you? There's still some issues to fix. Producer Toby Coffey worked on one of the projects called Draw Me Close.
What if we want to have an audience of 500 people? What does that look like? We're going to have to change this.
Coffey is still trying to figure out how to scale this up, but for today, people have to wait in long lines. And the ticket price? About $40. Andrea Seidel comes to the Tribeca Film Festival every year, but this is her first time trying virtual reality. Worth the cost of admission?
It's very new to us, so it was worth the price. I mean, who knows? After doing it 2 million times, it's like, do I want to spend $40 to do that? You know, I don't know.
Her final answer, though?
Oh, I love it.
For Marketplace, I'm Claire Tennisgetter in New York.
All this week, we have been looking at hacktivism. One thing we haven't talked about a ton yet, the law. Molly Sauter is a doctoral researcher and author of the book The Coming Swarm, DDoS Actions, Hacktivism, and Civil Disobedience on the Internet. Molly, thanks for talking with us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So can you briefly explain some of the laws governing cybercrime in the U.S. right now?
So there really is just one. It's called the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
Yes.
Essentially, what it boils down to is if more people are impacted by your action, the worse your punishment is and the higher your fine is.
Right.
And as we know, on the internet, audiences can scale very fast.
Are there clear examples of this law being sort of abused on the side of the prosecution?
So there was a guy who's goes on the internet by the name of Weave, whose name is Aaron Orenheimer. So AT&T assigns an address to your iPad when you put your iPad on the network. Andrew discovered that this address was actually publicly accessible. And he sent them an email. It was like, hey, you need to fix this because this is a massive security bug, or I'm going to give it to Gawker. They certainly didn't fix it. And he and his partner gave that information to Gawker, which wrote an article about it. And Andrew and his partner were arrested and criminally prosecuted for hacking when these objects, these technical objects, were publicly available on the internet through a mistake of the company.
Do you think that hacktivism in the digital world will ever replace activism in the physical world?
I don't think so. I think it'll become more intuitive. I don't think you're going to see a sole push to be online. I think more people are getting interested in running for office since the last presidential election. More people are interested in knowing how their government works. So you're going to see a panoply of tactics that are coming forward, and the internet's just going to be part of it.
Molly Sauter, she's the author of the book, The Coming Swarm, DDoS Actions, Hacktivism, and Civil Disobedience on the Internet. Molly, thanks a lot for talking with me.
Thanks so much for having me.
There is a ton more of information and sound from all of our conversations in our series this week, produced with the help of Marketplace's awesome Danielle Stevens. Big ups, Danielle, on our website, all of it at marketplacetech.org. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.